What exactly am I doing? What am I doing new? How do I get out of my comfort zone? So one might be really product development or, you know, kind of content development. The other really might be process. So you really do need a village. And that's one of the things that we really, really say to entrepreneurs. And I talk about a lot, everybody needs help. And if you're not used to asking people for help, you don't ask people for help. Yeah. And a lot of entrepreneurs come to my weekends on Techstars and they say, I have a great idea, but I don't want to share it, you know, because I think someone else is going to pick it up. And right away, now, after doing a lot of these weekends, I say to them, your idea is never going to happen. And they say to me, how dare you say that? And I say, if you're not willing to share it and you don't think that you have the magic and you know what you're doing, you're never going to convince anybody else.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte, and today I'm joined by Eileen Marcus. Eileen is a multifaceted professional who creates funny videos, writes helpful articles, and runs a business called Aligned Workplace. She helps leaders and founders use innovation to attract and keep great talent. Eileen is also the author of Managing Annoying People, plus a Techstars global facilitator. She travels the U.S. mentoring entrepreneurs on how to start and scale businesses. Welcome, Eileen.
Thank you for having me, Candace. Yay!
So tell us your unique story. How did you get to where you are today? And I know it's a good one. So buckle up, audience.
Well, I'm going to go quickly through it. You know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and I find that a lot of people have a lot of hurt and non-abundance and stuff in their background. So I kind of boil my story down like this. I came from a hysterical home, right? My parents were first generation American, Jewish, both their families, one survived the Holocaust. So they were survivors. They made it through the camps. The other side, their whole family died and they had survivor guilt because only they survived. So there was a lot of kind of emotional hysterical. And then they grew up in the Depression. So it was really like a lot of lack of abundance and scarcity and fear that I grew up with and was handed down, which I call generational trauma. So my father was always angry. And in response to that, I became very happy. Now, I should disclose that my father was an engineer. And it's only years later, he died when I was 18 and I'm, you know, well in my 60s. So he's been gone a long time. But we used to say to him, what did you do all day? And this is the only time he smiled. He'd go like this and turn his hand like that, like this and turn his hand like that. Years later, I find it funny. He was one of the engineers that worked on the automatic ice maker at GE. How do you get that ice to dump automatically? But unless he was doing that joke, he was always angry. So I took the opposite and became happy. My mother was always a follower. There were a lot of problems. They lived in the suburbs, you know, always a lot of things going on, schedules, four kids. So I became a leader because the woman could never solve problems. It was always a crisis, you know, what's for dinner? How are we picking up the kids? There's a raccoon in the backyard. Whatever it was like high alert. So I'm a problem solver. My sisters were very low energy. They never really got excited about anything, even building Barbie houses, of which I wanted to be. They said I wanted to be the boss. I just wanted to build a totally engaged community that we all had a part in. Even then I was an entrepreneur and pool our resources. So I became very high energy. And, you know, the constant for me was the fact that because my house was so difficult for me, I had to get out of it. So I became a joiner. I was on the swim team. I was a Girl Scout. You know, I started working, all those things. So between learning how to be in community and wanting to have jobs so I could have my own money and independence, that's what really created me, because those two pillars, community engagement, being part of, and getting financial independence, are really what have driven my career and helped me to help others.
Ooh, there's a lot to unpack there. Want to start with generational trauma?
Never, but yeah.
All right. Offer some practical advice on how to overcome it. I mean, I have my own generational trauma. I think I've told you before that my grandfather was murdered by the Chinese government. Yeah. So that's generational trauma.
I give the same advice, whether we're talking about, we'll get into more being annoying, you know, starting your own business, being stuck, really start stopping today. The first thing is be very aware. Know that it is generational trauma, right? Like, you know, there's a great meme goes around Facebook about this guy who says, I was so busy ignoring all my parents' obvious problems, I neglected about the, what he calls, not negative, but, you know, like benign behaviors. He has a different word, like the not, and he washes out Ziploc bags like all the time because that's what they did. So the first thing is to be aware, like because of my family grew up in so much scarcity, you know, in my house, if you didn't put, if you didn't finish every scrap, if you didn't use everything, if you didn't save everything, at a certain point, I had to look around my life and say, why do I need this piece of ribbon? What, I mean, am I ever going to eat that half an egg I didn't eat that I put in the refrigerator, right? And then clean that out of your house. So you have to be really aware. I call that stop your BS, your blind spots. Everybody thinks it's something else, but get your blind spots and then start stopping today. It's never a good time to throw out that egg, throw it out, stop washing out the Ziploc bags. You just, it's awareness. It's not a big secret. It's just moving your attention to it.
Sometimes marrying somebody who doesn't have that issue is the solution. So my father's parents lived through the depression. And I remember my grandmother, whenever we would go over to their house for dinner, she would scrape every last bit of rice into the container and put it in the refrigerator. She just saved everything. And my, you know, my mother lived during a war-torn country where their home was bombed. They lost everything. So they had to struggle to survive. So she was really a hoarder as well. So it comes from both sides, right? And then I marry a man who just throws things away willy-nilly and does it. And sometimes it annoys me because I'm like, what'd you do with my blah, blah, blah? I threw it away. You were done with it.
So. Right. You know, and my partner is a farm boy. So like, you know, extra food, throw it to the pigs, you know, and nothing like already gone. So exactly. So sometimes you get someone, I call those mirrors, that get to let you see your behavior face to face and you can realize to change it. But, you know, I mean, we all, you know the story by now. Awareness is the first step. And I always thought I could skip right over it, but it is. Be aware that this might not be something I do. This might be something I learned. And once you realize that, you can unlearn it.
Yeah. And it, you may not even know how you learned it. Yes. That, oh, wow. Life changing. I want to dig into Techstars because before I met you, I had never even heard of this organization. And now that I know about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, every community needs Techstars. So talk to me about Techstars.
Yeah, so Techstars is a large seed accelerator. So prior to Shark Tank, all those things that everybody knows, you know, kind of like hackathons and pitch contests, Techstars was working in communities to help people learn how to be entrepreneurs. And there are three pillars in Techstars, and it's changed over time. And they were just named, I think, the largest and one of the best VCs. And I didn't pull up my numbers, but anybody can go to techstars.com and see, you know, it's like over 3,400 companies they've helped seed and start. And they do this through three ways. One is by accelerators. So this is something that used to be one accelerator. Now there's a Denver accelerator, Boston, New York, Philly, you know, everybody has an accelerator. So companies that come through the Techstars model, I'll talk about that in a minute, can get a really benchmarked, best case, you know, 6 month experience of how to build my company, what to do, how to approach VCs. So you have to have been through the funnel. How do you get in the funnel? That's where I come in. The top of the funnel are called Techstars weekends, startup weekends. And we come into communities and we help them build an entrepreneurial ecosystem. So, you know, who are the philanthropists? Who are the businesses who have done this? Who's on the mayor's team? Who's on the city council? Who wants more economic development? Because as I said, for me, one of my pillars is financial freedom, for me personally. And that means helping everybody learn a way to make their own money and be their own boss. Or if you learn these entrepreneurial skills, you're actually even better in an organization. And we come in and we work with a group of organizers, business leaders, concerned individuals, very often professors from a local university or from the high school sometimes. And we help to create a weekend where in 54 hours, we take you through the startup experience. You know, how do you, from an idea to actually testing if the idea works, to creating what we call an MVP, a minimum viable product, and then to monetization, and then pitch contest, where at the end of the night, everybody, you know, there are local judges and people win, and then they could either move on to an accelerator, more Techstars, or go somewhere else. or find people that they want to work with. It might not even be the idea of that weekend. So Techstars really is an immersive experience that gives everyone, no matter your language barriers, your economic status, whatever it is, a chance to learn what is it really like to be an entrepreneur. How did those people even get to Shark Tank?
I experienced something very similar to that through the Rich Dad Poor Dad organization. It was I cannot remember what it was called, but you know, I went to one of those 2-hour, and I'm not getting the vibe that this is the way Techstars works at all. I know that Techstars is a nonprofit and Rich Dad Poor Dad is a for-profit. So I went to like a 2-hour free event, and then we got invited to a $500 weekend event. And during that weekend event, it was how to create your, you know, how to build your business or how to improve your business. I'd already had a business for 10 years, but one of the activities that we did as a group was we created a business plan for a brand new product. And one of the groups that they were actually sitting at the same table as us. They wanted to open a fried chicken business that only sold chicken backs and toast, fried chicken backs and toast. And it's like, how do you tell somebody that their idea doesn't have wings?
You tell them by, I'll tell you exactly how you tell them. You tell them by financially modeling it and showing that they don't have a large enough audience and they can't sustain it. So that's exactly, I always say part of learning what works is what doesn't work. A lot of times, you know, we always talk about failure. You have to learn, you know, entrepreneurs have to be flexible. You have to learn how to fail, but you have to really learn how to fail because there are very few people that hit it right out of the box. And Techstars does not show, I mean, it's a nominal fee for the weekend, usually not more than $35 or $50 for 54 hours of great meals, local food. And then when you get into an accelerator, it's all paid for. So, you know, it's really the experience. And you know, the big misconception, and years ago it was really about tech, but now, as I like to say when I work with communities, every business, even if you're running a chicken back fried business, is tech enabled, your ordering, your books. So it's really about whatever the business is, it could be very hands-on, you're going to have a tech background and you're going to need those partners. Yeah. And your social media marketing and stuff, of course.
All right, so if somebody is hearing this interview and they're going, oh my gosh, I need Techstars in my life. I want to go to one of the events.
Techstars.com. You will see this startup weekend. Are you an entrepreneur? Are you a community organizer? You know, all doors lead to the same place. Do you want to, you know, show up for a webinar? There's something called Startup Day that's happening in another month where people from all over the country, different regional people, different founders come and talk about their experience. So you can, you know, the idea is that if you want to be an entrepreneur, hang out with other entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of data and studies out there about like, you are who you hang out with, right? So same New York Times article about like the 7 people you hang out with. If you want to run and you don't hang out with anyone that run, I never want to run, but if you want to run, you know, hang out with people who run. There's an old joke, you know, if you go to a barbershop enough times, eventually you're going to get a haircut. Yeah. So like that kind of joke, hang out with entrepreneurs, find out who's doing it in your community, you know, call, you know, always the local government will always have an entrepreneurial community development, might be called economic development. But if you Google Techstars, and I know Candace did it yesterday or the day before, you will see community weekends, workshops, you know, there's toolkits, there's a bunch of stuff.
There is a lot to do. So your business doesn't necessarily have to be tech related. You just have to be in a business that's going to need tech, which is every business.
Well, or you don't even have an idea yet, right? It's right. Every business is tech enabled. It's really about, yes, any business is going to be tech enabled now.
I love it. And the website is full of resources. It's really remarkable. Definitely check it out, guys, especially if you have an idea in your head and you want some help with it. But you can also hire a coach for that too. I'm just saying.
Yes. And, you know, but let's stop there a minute because there are ecosystems, right?
Correct.
You know, like I'm Candace's, you know, you're learning about me today and hearing more about me for people listening, but I have a wealth of knowledge and I go around the country telling people how to start businesses and how to grow them. And I speak, but I hired Candace because I needed someone to keep me accountable. What exactly am I doing? What am I doing new? How do I get out of my comfort zone? So one might be really product development or, you know, kind of content development. The other really might be process. So you really do need a village. And that's one of the things that we really, really say to entrepreneurs. And I talk about a lot, everybody needs help. And if you're not used to asking people for help, you don't ask people for help.
Yeah.
And a lot of entrepreneurs entrepreneurs come to my weekends on Techstars and they say, I have a great idea, but I don't want to share it, you know, because I think someone else is going to pick it up. And right away, now, after doing a lot of these weekends, I say to them, your idea is never going to happen. And they say to me, how dare you say that? And I say, if you're not willing to share it and you don't think that you have the magic and you know what you're doing, you're never going to convince anybody else. So keep it a secret and that's where it will stay. So, you know, yeah. It is really about, and we talk a lot about this in Techstars. We just had a whole program on your team. Who do you need on your team? I need a Candace to help me stay accountable, to help me think about other ideas that maybe I haven't thought about. And, you know, I call it cross-pollination. Candace has a different expertise than me. There are some ideas from her expertise that I wouldn't have thought about in what I do. Mm-hmm. So it's really about finding a personality that builds you up as a coach and helps you, yes, with content and business, but you're still going to need those people in your industry to work directly with.
Well, you're transitioning from working in big corporate, you had 20,000 people who reported to you at one point in your career, and now you're working on
10,000, but that was enough.
I thought it was 20. Sorry. Uh-huh. I'm just giving you more credit than, but my expertise is running a mom and pop operation that was very successful, you know, a husband and wife who built a business, you know, so I can really help somebody who's transitioning from working in the corporate environment to having their own company, because it's not the same. There's a lot of lessons that you take, but it's not the same. So yeah, there's a lot of great things there. I recently learned about the law of 2 feet. Mm. And I think it was Mike Roderick who mentioned this, and he's another coach. He's a really interesting dude. I'm trying to get him on the show because I think the audience would love listening to him. Anyway, the law of 2 feet isn't his law. It came from somebody else. But the premise of the law of 2 feet is if you are in a situation where you are networking or you're with a group of people and that group of people doesn't serve your future needs, it is okay for you to use your 2 feet and walk away.
I'd say that rule works in life.
Yeah. And I just love that law because you don't have to be, so what I have done recently is I am trying to network I want to network more with people who are in the coaching space, in the podcasting space. I belong to a networking organization, a BNI chapter, which is great. It serves me really well, but that group of people is real estate agents, mortgage brokers, you know, accountants, which is a great network to have. You need to have that network. But I wanted to network more with people who are coaching and offering coaching programs and have really great podcasts that are successful. So I on purpose went out looking for podcast and coaching networking mixers, and I found several. Some of them didn't serve me, so I never returned. And some of them are so good that I'm there every single time I can possibly be there. So you just have to try a lot of things. Don't just say, oh, that didn't work for me. Look for another opportunity. You know, surround yourself, just like Eileen said, surround yourself with the people that will serve you, your future self.
That's right. You want to build to your future self, and it takes a community. You still need your BNI group, but you need these people that are helping to elevate you in your space. Mm-hmm. Yes, very important. One of my core messages is we are all on this planet together for a reason. So why are you operating alone, right? You have to work with others. That's our main purpose here, to help lift each other up.
Yeah, exactly. Lifting each other up is so, so important. All right, I want to talk about your book. And I know you wrote it more than 10 years ago. But I've told you before that I think people need your book right now more than they've ever needed it before, because we are returning to the way it used to be, but it's never going to be the way it used to be in the post-pandemic. Yes. So your book's called Managing Annoying People. It's fantastic. I have my copy here. I moved it to my bookcase, but I have a copy of it too. It's a fantastic book. Talk to me about the book and what the premise is.
Yeah, the premise of the book is I was coaching CEOs. And, you know, I didn't really talk about when I told my story, you know, like there are two things that really helped me to propel myself to become an entrepreneur versus continue to manage 10,000, which could have been 20,000 people, right? One is I had cancer, like Candace. I'm a cancer survivor. And for me, that wasn't enough, because that was like, oh God, I got through that. Now I got to rush, right? But, you know, it does change you. It changes your physical health, you know, especially when you go through very hardcore chemo. So, you know, I was a cancer survivor. The second thing that happened to me is I had a boss that I was a number two, a really good number two. You have a vision. I will put wheels on it better than your vision. And he was stealing. It was a nonprofit. And he ended up going to jail for embezzlement. And I was collateral damage. I got fired on, you know, page A1 of the New York Times. I was in New York at the time, Wall Street Journal, The Post. There I was, fired, collateral damage. Most of the senior team. But
even though none of you had anything to do with the
because
you didn't catch it.
Well, I don't know if it's not that we didn't catch it, because, you know, when someone's cheating, like when they're taking cash in a bathroom in Chinatown, like, how are you going to catch them? Right. Like, how could I know? And, you know, it was found because it was, you know, talk about technology. Right. Like we were $160 million organization. Our insurance bill was 1%, which in accounting is not material. So it was under $1 million. So no one would have flagged it. But that insurance bill was actually inflated by almost $200,000 or $300,000. We had a fleet of trucks. We had warehouses. We had 1,800 apartments. We had buildings. So no one even thought about $1 million insurance policy. But, you know, we had home care. I mean, home care, the insurance policies are astronomical. And then what happened, back to a little tech starzy, is that there was a law that all of the insurance companies now, because of what's it called when everything becomes open, you know, have to transparency, have to put the premiums online. And all of a sudden, this was our premium. Why were we paying that? Boom. So where was that money going? You know, the insurance broker was breaking us out with this incredible matrix. I don't want to get stuck in it. You know, what was costing $1 million? They were skimming the 300 off and splitting it. How could we possibly know? The accountants, no one picked it up. But after that, because I was well-respected, I got jobs and I was working and I'm doing this. And a lot of people, you know, hired me just for that. How do you know if the boss is cheating? How do you have this problem? And now everybody kind of saw what I was doing in a different light and really understood, you know, I was running a $160 million organization with, you know, somewhere, maybe like, you know, 300 contracts and funding streams. And I started consulting and I started saying the same thing to everyone, right? It was like, I was like a broken record. Like, you're not working with your team. Why are you acting like that? Like, my team, my team. And every time it would come down to what they were doing. So as a joke, I kind of wrote out like a few chapters and sent it to someone. And then this person happened to be in the publishing industry. And that was the deal, you know, I'll work with you, but you never send me anything you write, right? Because that's everybody wanted to get published by him. And I sent it to him. And then, you know, because I was like 5 weeks of, you have to manage your team differently. You can't show up upset. You have to run these meetings differently. When you roll your eyes, the whole team sees it, you know, that whole thing. And I sent it, and really, literally 20 minutes later, I was like, ignore that. We vowed never to do that. I can't believe I'm telling this story. And and he wrote, too late, already read it, love it, keep writing. So that's kind of how the book was born. It was born out of managing annoying people. I was managing annoying CEOs, but it was seeing those same behaviors time and time again, pointing the finger at your staff when it was really you who was setting those behaviors.
So I have two things there. Sometimes don't be afraid to ask. I have a similar story. I waited too long though. There was a job I wanted in Canada, and after thinking about it for 2 or 3 weeks, I went to the CEO of our company and I said, I'd really like to be considered for that job. And he goes, that's a fantastic idea. I'll call the CEO of that division, because he was a CEO of US, and he called the CEO of Canada. And then he comes to my desk, and right in front of my direct boss, he says to me, it's already been filled. And I was like, oh, I went above their heads to talk to you directly. And you just called me out in front of my boss. but yeah, if I had gone in, because the CEO of my company immediately said, yeah, you are perfect for that job. And if I had asked earlier, like if you had never asked the publisher, you probably wouldn't have ever finished writing the book.
Right. Well, and not only that, but it's also about, like, you know, that story is a good one, even about this, like what made that guy think it was okay to stay in front of his boss and not think through all the implications. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many pieces to unpack in that story. But, you know, now I really, you know, because I'm evolving managing annoying people to managing annoying me. And that is more of what you're talking about, Candace.
Well, it comes back to the managing annoying people. My direct boss was intimidated by me because she knew.
Well, that's different. You didn't say that.
And I think that he might have done, the CEO might have done it because he knew that. Right. You know, anyway, I ended up leaving that company a few months later, like well, 6 months later.
Wait. Let's go back to 2 feet. You walked.
Yeah, I walked away. I walked away to a different opportunity that I ended up in a job I hated, but it led me to meet my husband.
But exactly yeah. Right. That's the exact point of managing annoying people. So whether the, you know, the lesson for you was, I don't ask, I don't get, you had to go around your boss. Mm-hmm. Your boss didn't like your boss was, you know, the high boss didn't like the low boss. It created a whole chain reaction that resulted in you leaving the company. Yeah. And my advice here is some people are supposed to leave the company, but this woman, Candace, is good. So how could they have avoided all these things of you not feeling worthy and this person not hearing you and you have to go in here and you missing the opportunity instead of a way for you to actually have ascended into a position that you were truly able to do, you know, and maybe you met your husband anyway.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I would have met him if I was living in Canada, but it is what it is. It is what it is. That lesson of actually asking him, walking into his office and telling him that I wanted that job is so many people don't do it.
Yes.
You know, and that's the lesson there. Do it.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing that could happen is that your life stays the same.
Right. Exactly. No, that is the real lesson. And there are many reasons why we don't do it. Right. And there is also some external clues that you're saying you learn. I did it too late. Like how our own negative, like thinking I'm not enough or I shouldn't, or those things we get in our own way in actually doing it. But, I really spend a lot of time with people, you know, this is what you want. Let's figure out how to get you there quickly without setting up these triangles and these problems. It's about, you know, everybody should know that Candace wanted to ascend in the organization. And even if your boss was jealous of you and didn't like you and was intimidated, it's okay. You know, for you have every right to say, I'm looking for a promotion. You know, will you help me or not?
Well, and sometimes the managing annoying people is managing your boss.
Oh, yeah. Managing up, managing down, and you are annoyed all the way around. That's what I like to say.
Where's your ladder? Where's your ladder, Eileen?
Where's my ladder? Yes, my ladder.
You can manage up or you can manage down.
Sometimes you're just hanging on, going sideways.
But you have to manage yourself. So that's what you're working on now, is your new project is managing yourself. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So managing ourselves, I think it all really comes down to this. I came on this quote that I just love that I'd like to share if you don't mind. And I don't usually, the quote is, in the long run, we shape our lives, we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die. And the choices we make are ultimately our own responsibility. And that's Eleanor Roosevelt. And
woman was so ahead of her time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always like to say about no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. Talk about generational trauma. That's not exactly true. They can all make you feel inferior without your consent. Because I, you know, as a child, what do I know? So I spent my life saying, I don't know, Eleanor, you can't make me feel inferior. Yeah. You know, an abuser, someone can make you feel inferior without your consent. But the point is, it is a certain point you have to step into the sunshine and say, no, they can't do it anymore. And I think that we make a lot of choices, like you're saying, you know, I made the choice finally, I hate that finally word, to go in and talk to the boss and say, I want this. And that created a chain reaction. And I think what's beautiful about that chain reaction is, like you said, I didn't get the job, but I got the husband. Like whenever we take a step that we know in our gut is right, and we get out of our head, right, of should I, shouldn't I, they're going to fire me, is my boss going to know? If we get out of our head and stay in our gut, you might not get what you thought you would get, but thank you, Rolling Stones, you'll get what you need, right? You will get what you need, and you needed a different job and a husband. So
that's the perfect title for a book. I didn't get the job, but I got the husband. Or a movie, or a blog post, or you know, that's, or a country western song. That would make a great country western song.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I just, my blog dropped today on 60 and Me, which is 13 girls that sing my blues country western songs. So that can fit right in there. I'm going to give it to one of those girls. But that is exactly the point that, you know, when you take a step based on your intuition, based on what you want, based on saying, what doors do I want to open, and where do my 2 feet, where can they take me? All of a sudden, it might not be what you expect, but you propel forward. And I think that's really the story about, you know, managing annoying people was really about how do you like not get stuck, and how do you, you know, a lot of people, a lot of corporations I talk to, 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, coming back from virtual, 4 steps back, 1 step forward, you know, let's turn that around. But they really feel like, you know, their teams aren't teams, and people aren't working, and people don't trust each other, and people don't want to be there. So how do you turn that around to, you know, for me, if I take a job, I want to show up and do the best job I can. So as a boss, how do I help someone understand that whether they are filling the coffee mugs, filling, you know, I always say when I do my trainings, I ask this question, who's the most important person in the firehouse? Who is the most important person in the fire company?
The cook.
The cook is a good guess. Often I get the dog, you know, the dog is the most important. The most important person is the firehouse, is whoever was supposed to put the gas in the truck. Because if the gas doesn't go in the truck, no one is leaving, whether they ate or not, whether they have the dog or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if your job is in your tactically saying, you know, which hoses to use and what pressure, and, you know, you're actually strategically putting out the fire, your job is to put the gas in the truck. You're just as important as that guy. They might pay differently because of different skill sets, but that is really what managing yourself is about, to understand that the actions and the choices you make every day, whether you are in childcare, whether you're in, you know, food service, no matter what you're doing, really does have a noble purpose. You're really helping others to live their lives. You're showing up to help people move their priorities forward. Sometimes you're moving the priorities forward, and you're feeding your family and taking care of yourself. And what is more noble than that? So managing annoying me is really about, you know, how do I really love what I do every day and accept it? And then think about, like you said before, my higher self, how do I get to those places I want instead of blaming everyone else and feeling stuck in my situation?
Yeah. If this is resonating with you, I highly recommend that you follow Eileen on YouTube or LinkedIn or your websites, EileenMarcus.com.
Yeah, or alignedworkplace.com. Or
follow her, because she does put out daily content along these lines. Really good stuff. Really, really good stuff. What do you want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
I think we should talk a little about our body language and our cues, because when we talk about either managing annoying people or managing ourselves, I think we really forget by how much is kind of nonverbal in what we say, right? And, you know, there are a lot of experts out there that talk about it, but I always really like to remind people that, you know, the intent, people are smart, right? People really are smart. I mean, we've met a lot that might not seem that, right? But there are a lot, people are smart. And I think we forget that the intent, like, even if we show up like, and we think we're really willing, if we're not really invested, and this is another big part of, you know, being a boss and managing annoying me, if I'm not really honest with myself about why I'm doing something, then it's going to come across. It's going to come across. So I think we forget how much is communicated between in our nonverbal behavior. I think that's one place that people really, in terms of why am I not getting what I want, or what's not happening at work, or even on Zoom, how people relate to you. That's one thing that you can look at. And I think, you know, we all need to look at our triggers. Now, triggers is a triggering word. People hear the word triggers and they're like, oh, I have a gun to my head. No, actually, you know, a trigger is something that gets started, right? It's a chemical reaction. You pull the trigger and, you know, it fires the bullet, right? So it heats up. And I like to look at it more like that. So in this world, whether you're managing people or you're managing yourself, you really need to look at what is getting you started. And it usually falls into one of 3 or 4 categories, right? It's something that, you know, I call them reminders. It reminds you of a situation. You know, we were talking before about the boss, like that triangle between you can't go to the boss, you have to go to the other boss. It might have reminded you of your family, couldn't go to your mother, had to go to your father, or you couldn't go to your sister, or, you know, something. It reminds you of a place that wasn't good for you growing up. It could be, you know, your boss can remind you of a cousin or an aunt or someone who wasn't kind to you, so you don't want to deal with them. So there are reminders, but there are also mirrors. And those are people that we talked about before that kind of show you yourself. And we often really don't like what we see, but those are our greatest learners. So I think, you know, as an everyday, how do I start to say, well, I don't understand it. I show up to work every day and I should be the boss and this should be happening. You know, if you can look at yourself and say, wait a minute, how am I really showing up? And, you know, I know for myself, right? Like I'm a whirlwind. I just am, right? Talk about, you know, when people hire me or want to hire me and they say, well, what should I know about working with you? I'm like, well, buy the handbook because I'm annoying. So, I gave you the instructions on how to deal with me, but I'm a whirlwind, right? Whether I show up late, you know, or whatever, it could be on time for me. I come in, the world changes and who has coffee and what's going on and nice shirt. And some people don't like that. It gets them upset. So you have to really ascertain how are you fitting in and what's happening and, you know, step back to make sure that you're really presenting yourself in a way that others want to let you help them, want to let you help them. And I think that's kind of key. You're muted.
Hey, you should unmute yourself before you say something.
Maybe not. Maybe say it.
I tend to mute myself when I'm not talking because I'll interrupt you if I don't, which is how I manage annoying me.
That is great. Exactly, yeah. Right. I interrupt too, like I just did. So yeah, it's learning those tricks, mute, you know, there's an old thing, an old trick. Does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? Does it need to be said by me right now? You know, like ask yourself three questions before you open your mouth.
Okay, let's review those again. Before you open your mouth, what do you say? What do you ask yourself?
Does this need to be said? Right? Like I was at a meeting the other night and, you know, we were talking about changing some guidelines and someone said, well, of course they have to be changed, you know, on the computer. Like, yeah. So like, does it need to be said? Like, did you really need to remind us that, right? Does it need to be said by me? Yeah, they have to be changed on the computer. Am I the one that needs to say it? And if I am the one that needs to say it because no one's saying it, do I need to say it right now? Is there another bite at the apple? Can I put it after in an email? Like, do I really need to open my mouth? Because, you know, what we talk about a lot when we talk about managing annoying people is your brand, your capital. You know, how people relate to you is how you show, you know, it depends on how you show up. So if you're always interrupting, if you're always having the obvious idea, if you always have something to say, while you think it's very important, they're listening to you less and less and less because you're always doing the same thing. So by looking through this framework, does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? Does it need to be said by me by right now? You change the dynamic of how other people relate to you. You can put it in the email. You can say it later. And if it needs to happen later, you don't have to say, I should have said something. I told you so. No, you just make it happen then. That's a big part of managing annoying me.
Yeah, I told you so never serves anybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Talk about generational trauma.
So I want to go back because you were talking a little bit about being on a Zoom meeting. And I noticed a really bad habit I had. I take notes when I'm meeting with people and my notes are over here. And so while I was doing interviews with people in a podcast setting, I would, you know, I edit my own videos. So I'm editing and I'm noticing that I'm looking over here and I'm like, well, that's really rude. I'm not looking at the person I'm speaking to. So I decided that I'm not going to do that anymore. And I'm just going to let AI take my notes for me after the meeting. So after I'm done editing the video, I run it through AI to get the key points so that I know. Oh, yeah. So I don't have to take notes anymore. I can just pay attention to you. But I also notice that sometimes I do it when I'm in meetings run by other people, like all my attention will get averted over there. So managing myself, I need to keep my eyes on the Zoom. Maybe that means turning off the other monitor.
Yeah. You know, you're raising one of my favorite points about, you know, what I talk to people about. There is not one fix. It's really all about noticing how it shows up on you and why. That's why I say it's your blind spots. It's not your bullshit. How do people not relate to you? If they don't think you're listening, right, they're not going to relate to you. But, you know, you might be dealing with other people who are doing the same thing. They're not even noticing you're not looking, which is a bigger problem. But you know what I'm saying. So I'm not one for, you know, my fixes are like stop, you know, notice your blind spots, really figure out, take a 360 view and really figure out how are you showing up for others? Because it's going to be different for you, different for me, different for everyone, but it's about that awareness. And then we're all smart. You know, if we're in this business and we're trying to be better, you figured it out. I'm going to let AI take my notes. I'm going to do this. And all of that requires a level of trust, right? That I can get the same quality of work, that I can do it, and about letting go. You know, that's why I say sometimes we're just hanging on the ladder because I've always done it this way. And we just want to do it a little different because that's going to make you a better podcast host. You're going to look more directly at people. They're going to feel more engaged. They're going to feel more like you care. And those things are important. So that's why my first piece of advice is always like, look at your blind spots. What aren't you seeing that others see about you? And then it's up to you to decide, is it something I can change and is something I want to change?
Yeah.
My second piece of advice is always, you know, right size it. I call it Goldilocksing it, which is, you know, we all know the story about Goldilocks, right? Goldilocks goes into the house, the porridge is too hot, too cold, just right. The bed's too hard, too soft, just right. So like what we were saying before, doesn't need to be said by me. Doesn't need to be said by, you know, it needs to be said. Doesn't need to be said by me. Doesn't need to be said by me right now. Really right size that and see if you need to say it. But then is my other favorite thing about Goldilocks that we always forget. She was trespassing. So the question is, should I even be thinking that? Do I even have to open my mouth? Is that even territory I should be in? And this is really important in team and group meetings, right? You might not like the way someone always brings their data or shows up with certain, you know, analysis or the way that their department operates, but it is it for you to say something. And that's where you look once again at your blind spots. And then my third piece of advice is I'm not telling you how to fix it. Just start doing something different. You figure it out, right? Like you said, I use AI, I use my notes. You know, I really, you know, use the rule of when I'm in a meeting and I want to do something, I literally sit on my hands to remind myself to keep zip the lip, you know, it's very.
Yeah. I had a situation like that once when I was very young, working for the same company I was working for before. I was an inside territory manager and the outside rep, the outside sales rep invited me to a meeting with one of our largest clients. I managed their account on the inside. He was their sales rep and they had a short issue. Like in terms of percentage of short, you know, when we delivered to them, they would, you know, send back a, hey, we didn't get this, you know, their percentage was a lot higher than other companies. Like we're missing this one pair of boots. Right. So I called it out. I said, your company tends to be missing items and shipments more than other companies. And everybody at the table got a little mad at me for saying that. You know?
But that was right. You didn't, yeah. you didn't pull a fire alarm the first time they did it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the other piece about managing.
But they had an employee who was stealing from them. Right. That's the obvious. Right. Yeah.
Well, but I'm saying, or not obvious, right? Like yeah. They could have inventory, but the point is that you did it appropriately, Candace, and everybody else wasn't going to say something. So that's a big part of your intuition. You saw it, you felt it, you knew that there was a stealing problem. You had the data, like yeah. That is the time to do it. But the managing annoying me concept is you had to look at the blind spot. Like, why is no one else saying this? Why am I the only one that sees it? And we often talk about these things as negative, like, oh, I'm the only one complaining. No, I'm the only one who sees it. Yeah. I have to open my mouth. So run it.
Well, I wasn't the only one who saw it. That the people in shipping also, the guy in shipping would be always be like, give them again, you know?
Oh, right. But I'm saying, but you were the one I meant, yeah. But like steal, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like sometimes it could be, you know, this is really ridiculous, but I've had situations where it's a broken keyboard and the data entry person and like the decimal doesn't get in sometimes. And it's actually, you find that it's more of an accounting error that they're like the you know, but yeah. You had an instinct. So you went down, does it need to be said? Yes. Does it need to be said by me? Yes, because no one else is saying it. Does it need to be said by me right now? Yes, because this has been going on for how many months and yeah. No one's saying it. So that formula worked for you and it was appropriate and they found the stealing person and it got fixed. So that yeah. Formula works both ways. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. We need to start wrapping up. Do you have a favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
Do I have
and what is it? Favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique? And what is it?
Yes, my favorite marketing tool or technique, and I'm going to say I learned it from Candace, is just keep going. You know, don't stop. If something doesn't hit, you know, we talked before about your 2 feet. So my favorite tip is if something doesn't try, if plan A doesn't work, there's B, C, D, there's 26 letters in the alphabet, and then there's a lot of numbers. Just keep trying. Keep trying. That's my favorite tool, technique. Keep trying something new.
I learned that from archery. It's not just you and your bow and your arrow that are responsible for getting the arrow into the target. There's also the wind and all sorts of other factors that are external. So you have to keep shooting arrows until you hit.
And
adjusting.
Yeah. And I guess my other point would be use data. It's available, but build it with intuition. And that's like any business. Use data, but your intuition, you know.
Well, and don't get so hung up on the data that that's all you ever look at.
That's why I'm saying use the intuition with it, but it's there. I mean, if you know, I have a client recently, and I know wrapping up, who, you know, nothing's hitting. Like, don't keep on saying, but I know it's going to hit because nothing's hitting. You know what I mean?
Well, that's, isn't that the definition of insanity?
Oh yeah. We have a lot of those. That's why you have to learn how to manage the annoying people and not the insane ones. Right.
Yeah. All right. This is my favorite part of the interview. It's your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I am most grateful for everything that has been on my path, for everyone that thing that seemed like it was a closed door that turned into an open door and led me here today.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast that helps DIY marketers attract raving fans and repeat buyers. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Eileen Marcus. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Solily. I'm your host, Candace Rodarty, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.